This show furnished by Rowan, Gervey, and Wynn.
It's time for Gervey's Law, the intersection of law and life, with your host, injury compensation attorney, author, and mentor, Alan Gervey. Alan is managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan, Gervey, and Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm who have represented injured workers for over 35 years. Joined today by his co-host, radio personality, and television host, Carrie Kasem. Carrie brings a fresh, real perspective to the intersection of law and life, turning Murphy's Law upside down. And now, here are Alan Gervey and Carrie Kasem.
A good afternoon, Los Angeles, and everyone who is listening on the internet at kbc.com. I am Alan Gervey, and I am the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan, Gervey, and Wynn. And as usual today, I am here to manage your life, being the managing partner of everyone out there, their life. I am going to take control of your life today. And here with me, of course, is Carrie Kasem, who takes control of my life. Carrie, nice to see you.
Good to see you too, Alan.
I haven't seen you for a while.
It's been a little bit.
Yeah.
It's been a little bit.
And you are excited about the show.
I am. I'm always excited about the show. I mean, I get a little jealous, I have to say, when you swap me and Lisa Bloom.
Jealous?
She's awesome. She's like you. She's a super attorney filling in for me. She's amazing.
And she's actually going to be calling in today because we are dealing with a topic that is near and dear to her heart and to many of you. It is the crisis of foster care in the state of California. We have with us later in the show Leslie Starheimov, who is of the Children's Law Center. She is an attorney with the Children's Law Center. She's the executive director. She's certified child welfare law specialist. And we are going to talk about the mess that is the foster care system. There are so many abused and neglected children, and we are going to hear the skinny about what is going on out there. If you have been involved in the foster care program, you will want to call. It's 800-222-5222, 800-222-5222. If you have any stories to tell us about your situation with foster care, with foster children, with parenting, with the legal issues associated with adoption, all of these topics are fair game today on Gervey's Law. Before we start talking about foster care and before we welcome Leslie Starheimov from the Children's Law Center.
And before you get into your next topic that is going to be super deep and like serious, can I say something funny?
Absolutely.
Not really funny. I don't want to say that. I want to say I have an I don't know, many people who know me know that I have this like place in my heart for really old people. Like, to me, when I see somebody really, really old, I'm not talking senior, I'm not talking somebody, you know, 65 and over, I'm talking really old people, they're like babies to me, and how people go, oh, they're so cute.
Right.
I'm like that. I have this affection in my heart for really old people. I just think
you need to show
so
some
cute.
Respect. I mean, I don't think you should treat them like a baby.
Oh, I don't go up and pinch their cheeks, I promise.
Good.
I don't. But I just have this affinity for them. So I was looking on the internet, and I came across this story, and it was 2 days ago. I don't know. Have you seen this?
I'm not sure. What is it?
A young woman named Kelsey Harmon from Oklahoma went over to her granddad's house, and he had made 12 hamburgers for 6 grandkids.
Mm-hmm.
And the only grandchild that showed up was Kelsey. And he had his 12 burgers there, and he spent all day making dinner, and he was so excited. And so she decided that she wanted to take a picture. It's the saddest picture. I'm going to show you this. And it says, "Dinner with Papa tonight. He made 12 burgers for all 6 grandkids, and I'm the only one who showed up. Tear, love him." Now look how cute this guy is, right?
Wow, I'm taking a look.
Okay, he's cute, and he's eating his burger alone.
He's
really
by
sad.
Himself with a burger.
This went viral. This is a young kid that put this up about her granddad. They have 268,000 likes, 147,000 retweets, and Montel Williams is tweeting them. Ellen DeGeneres, hopefully, will put him on a show. But it was the saddest thing. It actually brought tears to my eyes, so I had to write her back. But I guess now all the grandkids have gone there putting pictures, because this is what the funny part is.
Well, they
not
were
funny.
Shamed into that.
When they were getting death threats.
I don't blame them.
So the woman, Kelsey, goes, look, guys, we're all here with Papa. He is so happy. He's Twitter famous now. He's really happy. And all the grandkids have come to see him, and they've taken pictures with Papa to show, look, we visited Grandpa.
Right.
So it was the cutest story that I have to say. If you want to go look for yourself and read all these tweets.
Yeah, maybe Adam LaRoche's son has time to go and have a hamburger now that he's not going to be in the White Sox clubhouse anymore. He should go check it out. Poor Drake.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's talk a little bit while we're on the subject, because I do want a couple minutes to talk about the Supreme Court justice nomination. Before we do, tell us about the conference that's coming up in April.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you. Yes. So once again, dealing with, you know, the senior population and dealing with aging issues, the Kasem Cares Conference on Aging is coming up April 21st through the 23rd. So the 22nd and 23rd, we have 44 speakers.
Wow.
Fritz Coleman is going to be
from
NBC, the weather guy, is doing the keynote speech at the end. We have the DA, Paul Greenwood from San Diego, speaking. We have, literally 44 speakers. If you go to agingandeducation.com, that's agingandeducation.com. Check it out. And if you put in the code radio, you get a huge discount. Plus, there's continuing education credits
for lawyers
and medical.
And doctors.
And nurses and, you know, CHES.
And a lot of people need those credits. I know that I get my MCLE credits all the time.
Yep.
And you need an interesting conference like this one to get them, because you don't want to go to a conference that's just boring, that has no relevance to anything.
And I have to say, legally pending credits, because you have to turn your credits in, but we are accredited for that, but you have to say
excellent,
pending credits.
Excellent. Excellent.
Yeah.
I have already apologized off the air. I won't be able to make it to the conference. I will be in Toronto with my family celebrating Passover.
Yes, and we are being very sensitive to people who are celebrating Passover. We have matzah and we have juice and we have fruit and certain things people can eat. And it is during the day. It's not at night. It's 8 a.m. to 4. So people who are practicing can come.
They don't have to spend their seders with all of the folks over at the conference.
Yeah, but agingandeducation.com. You can also go to Kasem Cares. .org. But yeah, I'd love to have you there. Type in radio. If you're a student, if you're a student and you want to go,
right.
Students are $25. You have to put the keyword student in, otherwise it's $99. So you have to put the keyword student in and it's $25.
So that is going to be a great conference. Everyone should check it out if they can. Before we take the break, I do want to talk about a significant event that occurred this week. President Obama nominated Merrick Garland, who is the Chief Justice of the District of Columbia Court of Appeal, to the Supreme Court seat, the open seat that, of course, was made open on because of Justice Scalia's death. And, of course, everyone is talking about it. I wrote on the Facebook page of Gervie's Law is my thought. So if you go to Facebook, Gervie's Law, you will read about what I had to say about the situation. There is so much discussion. I think there's about 25 comments of people going back and forth. I am sitting here right now wearing a Captain America T-shirt. You can see that?
I said hi, Captain America, when you walked in.
Yeah, I didn't even hear that because I'm so used to people calling me Captain America. But I got to tell you something, that I don't think there are any superheroes in this situation. In politics today, this country really needs to give its head a shake to figure out who they are presenting as nominees for the President of the United States. The Republican Party is in a mess. The candidates are all over the place, and no one can look at them and say, wow, we really have a leader. We really have someone with intelligence. We really have someone who has experience and someone who can do good for this country. Same on the Democratic side. I mean, who knows if Hillary Clinton's going to be indicted or not. But when you look at this situation with Merrick Garland, here he is, a rather moderate justice, by all accounts, is a super intellect, very, very smart, very experienced, probably one of the most experienced justices in the Court of Appeal in the District of Columbia. Of course, he is in that court, and they won't even give him a shot. They let politics play the Trump card, so to speak, here, and it makes no sense. If you want to have the confirmation hearing and he's not going to be confirmed, fine, but why not let the process play out? President Obama, for better or for worse, was elected for 4 years in this term. He's still part of it. The Supreme Court needs a seat. We're 4-4 right now. We need someone, especially someone who may go on either side of an issue, and he's an excellent choice, and we won't even let the process play out. I don't understand what's wrong with this country because they put politics ahead of everything. And yes, I understand a lot of my, and I'm an independent, I'm not Democrat, I'm not Republican, I can't vote, I'm Canadian. But I'll tell you, and you know, if Justin Trudeau was running, I wouldn't vote for him either, who's the Prime Minister of Canada. But the point is that this is ridiculous. Why can't we have some intelligence? Intelligence take over in these situations. We need a Supreme Court. We need people who are smart, who know how to look at issues, who understand the Constitution, who understand the laws of the land, and we're just going to let all of these freak politicians run our lives. We understand now why Trump is doing as well as he can, and I'm not saying that he's the guy that should be president, but you know, at some point this country has to put forward politicians who are smart, who are honest, who understand what's going on, and who aren't just playing these Republican-Democrat politics games. And it just frustrates me to no end that we finally get a good nomination, however you look at it. Okay, and this is a risk the Republicans are taking, because if things go the way they are and the fractured Republican Party presents Donald Trump as the president to be elect, the nomination, we know he's not going to get elected, or at least we don't know that. But and Hillary Clinton, if she's indicted, who knows who's going to be elected? Put President Trump there, and what are you going to get for a nomination? His sister, who's a Court of Appeals justice, maybe she's the next Supreme Court justice. Or what about Hillary Clinton? She could bring some liberal, crazy person who has no business being on the Supreme Court. So be careful what you wish for, Republican Party. Why don't you take someone who's moderate and who's ready to take the stand, who's got lots of experience. He's no youngster. Carrie, you're looking at me like you want to throw up.
I actually agree with you. No, I actually agree with you. Something. There you go. There you go. There you go. No, I believe judges should all be moderate. You know, you shouldn't be taking the side at that point. And if you are a good judge, you don't. You look at the law. You don't look at your political affiliation.
Right. And if I told you that Justice Garland is against the Heller case and a Second Amendment, you'd go crazy. We'll leave it at that. And not to say that he is. We don't know right now what he would decide on the right to bear arms. We have to take a quick break. We're going to talk about foster care. In the next segment, we're going to welcome Leslie Starr Heimov. Stay with us. You're listening to Gurry's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
Coming up on The Next Drive Home with Jillian Barbary and John Phillips, the one and only Mike Walker stops by.
Plus, let's not forget about Jack Abramoff and Roger Stone.
What are they doing?
Just kidding, Peter.
Live and local right after Dr. Drew and Psycho Mike.
On Talk Radio 790 KBC.
That was beautiful. You brought tears to my eyes.
Don't settle for that same old talk radio chatter. Tune in to the most independent voice on the airwaves for a fresh perspective you won't get anywhere else. Sam Nation, every Saturday at 3 p.m. right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
What's the secret to financial independence? You need a steady passive income, something more than just wages from a job. At Compound Stock Earnings, we teach you how to earn 3 to 6% cash return per month from your investments. We're so confident in your success that we offer a money-back guarantee on our Fast Start seminar. Want to learn more? Tune in to Unconventional Wisdom, the CSE Investment Show, this Saturday at 8 a.m. right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC or visit CompoundStockEarnings.com.
Any person who makes or causes to be made any knowingly false or fraudulent material statement or material representation for the purposes of obtaining workers' compensation benefits is guilty of a felony.
Another day at work. The pain is getting worse, and I'm afraid to say anything because I need this job, and I don't want to get fired. If I wasn't the only one supporting the family, I'd quit.
Is this you? Are you suffering every day while your injuries get worse, and there seems to be nowhere to turn? Or do you have an injury that was brought on gradually by repetitive motion, and now you can't perform your job duties at all? For over 35 years, the law firm of Rowan, Gervey, and Wynn has represented those who have sustained an injury on the job or have become disabled as a result of work. They're the experts in workers' compensation. You need an advocate. You need someone who cares about the injured worker. You need the law firm of Rowan, Gervey, and Wynn to get you through the nightmare. Friends, if you're suffering with a cumulative work injury, the law firm of Rowan, Gervey, and Wynn is in business to help you. Find out more. Call the law firm of Rowan, Gervey, and Wynn, 855-4-RGW-LAW. That's 855-4-RGW-LAW. Or go to rgwlawfirm.com. First consultations are free.
Staying healthy is difficult. You've got health questions, I've got health answers. I'm Dr. Bob Martz, and tune into my show Sunday morning at 10, right after The Motorman. Sponsored by Dr. O'Hara's Probiotics and Chia Omega at finer health food stores.
Welcome back to Gervie's Law, turning Murphy's Law upside down on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Yeah, we are back. Come on, rock it out, Carrie.
I'm rocking.
I can see
I'm rocking.
You're on your phone.
I am reading.
You are reading.
Right here, these statistics that I really am. I've known this for a long time, but I am floored by the foster care medicated statistics.
Isn't it crazy? We're going to talk about that. I'm glad you're looking at that right now. I'm Alan Gervie. I'm here with Carrie Kasem on Gervie's Law. The board is lit up. I guess my little diatribe on my soapbox before the break really got people either upset or got people excited. I'm not sure, but it's lit up. We have to turn to our guests, though, before we get to any calls on that subject. We have Leslie Starr-Hymov with us. She's the executive director of Children's Law Center, and we're going to talk about the foster care program and that they're involved with. She is an attorney. She's been with the Children's Law Center since 1992, is now executive director. Leslie, welcome to Gervie's Law.
Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you. Right off the bat here, tell us what the Children's Law Center does, because a lot of people don't understand the whole system of foster care and don't understand why there seems to be so many issues and so many problems surrounding foster care today.
So Children's Law Center is a private nonprofit law firm. We have a contract with the state, and through that contract we provide independent representation to every child that encounters the juvenile court system, the dependency court system as we call it. So any child who's removed from their family where there's allegations of abuse and neglect has a court case, and that court case is heard in the dependency court. And every child gets a lawyer. So we are the lawyers for those children in Sacramento as well as in Los Angeles County. So in between those two jurisdictions, we represent 33,000 children. And California is unique. There's only about half the states provide attorneys for children that are involved in the foster care system, and about half still don't.
How do kids know that they can get representation? How do kids know who are maybe possibly being abused or in a terrible situation? Do they know that they can get representation?
Well, I imagine most don't know until there's a court case, but what happens here in California, again, is as soon as the social worker from the county is involved, so say there's a call to the hotline or that their teacher has a concern, a neighbor, a family member, however it is that the Department of Children and Family Services becomes involved, they do an initial investigation. If that investigation gives them enough evidence to bring a case to court, at that moment the child gets an attorney. So they don't have to ask for us. They don't have to come find us. We find them.
Great. Okay.
Leslie, last year at the legislature and in the news, Senator Holly Mitchell talked about in SB 316 about caseloads of the lawyers who represent the children. They were up around 200, 300. They were trying to limit it maybe to 70 or 80. Is that really a detriment for the children to get justice?
Absolutely, and we were most appreciative of Senator Mitchell's efforts. Her caseload legislation is still a living bill, actually. It became a two-year bill. What did happen last year is through the budget process, we were able to increase the statewide funding for court-appointed counsel. We had asked for $33 million more statewide. The governor gave us 11, so we're not all the way there yet in terms of where we need to be. Right now, the statewide average is 250 children per lawyer, which, as anyone could imagine, is way too high. And as Senator Mitchell's bill had indicated, the optimum number is thought to be 77 children per lawyer, and that's based on a research study from 2008. The goal is 188 maximum, but with 77 being optimum.
So why is the system in such turmoil? I understand that when we look at the caseload of the lawyers, but there are so many issues that seem to be plaguing the system right now. What do you see most often when you have your people, your folks at the Children's Law Center representing the kids? What is the biggest problem you're seeing?
I'm not sure that one can identify just one problem. But I think numbers is a big part of it. The system is overwhelmed. The resources are overwhelmed. It's not just the lawyers whose caseloads are too high. The social workers, there's waiting lists for the parents to get drug treatment. There's waiting lists for the children to get therapy with a qualified therapist. We don't always have available foster homes. We have children in group homes that should be in foster homes. We have siblings that get separated because there aren't enough foster homes. We have kids who are changing schools unnecessarily because there's no foster home near their school. And we also have a lot of families that could provide more support to their extended family, right? Grandparents, aunts, and uncles who could provide care and support to the children, but there's a lack of resources to support those relatives and to help them, to help their own family.
We hear a lot about the abuses of these foster homes. It reminds me of the musical Annie. When we look at it, it's a hard knock life. I was reading yesterday about one of the homes where the woman, Miss Hannigan, I just call her Miss Hannigan, was waking up the kids in the middle of the night and forcing them to clean the home, and they weren't getting food. How do we put up with this? Can't the attorneys intercede and make sure that these kids are not being abused in this way?
Well, the attorneys definitely do intercede when we're aware. And I will say that although those stories are tragic and unconscionable, they're not the majority. You know, keep in mind that, again, we have 30,000 children in the system in Los Angeles alone. And those reports, although they're incredibly serious and we have to react to them swiftly when we hear them, are fairly infrequent. The social worker, the county social worker, is the entity that is charged with ensuring the quality of the foster home. The attorney's role is to protect our client's rights. So there is sort of a parallel investigation there, I guess you would say. And it goes back to the numbers again, though. When we have 250 clients each, we're operating in a triage mode, and we don't have the ability to visit every child every week, for example, or even once a month because there's just too many, which was why we fought so hard to see the increased funding so that we can hire more staff.
A question about the child drugging, because, I mean, I just want to read a couple statistics here, and you tell me what you think. More than 2 million children in the United States are on antidepressants. More than 4 million children in the United States are on stimulants. Some 20 million children worldwide are prescribed psychiatric drugs, so dangerous that agencies in Europe, Australia, and the U.S. have issued warnings about the serious adverse effects. And you have I think it's a 15%, maybe 20 now, of foster kids, it could be even more, are on these kind of psychotropic medications. What's going on, and are we just making these kids zombies so they can be handled easier?
That's part of the problem. You have to consider there are a certain number of children who genuinely have a serious mental health illness, often brought on by their trauma, and without the medication, they might be even worse off and unable to function because they're hurting themselves, for example, or hurting others. So that's a small portion. And if we take those out because they are receiving, you know, say those kids are receiving qualified, competent care from a clinician, from a mental health provider, and hopefully will only be on the medication for a short period of time. But we sort of don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater, right? So we have this small number who truly do need the medication. And then I think you're absolutely correct. We have a very large number who are on medication because it appears to be the simplest way to manage them. And because unlike children who are living at home who may be struggling at school or struggling with socialization or in their home, kids in foster care don't have a parent or a caregiver who's necessarily willing to put in the time and the energy that it takes to work with a child day after day after day to change their behavior or to get through a difficult situation or to manage a mental health issue, and giving them a pill is easier. And when you have six kids living in one home with one caregiver and all of them have issues, there isn't the resources to help the child in a using behavior intervention or other sorts of treatment. And then the other piece of it is that we have these children who are in a very atypical situation, right? They've been abused and neglected. They've been removed from their home. They've suffered repeated trauma. They may be in an unfamiliar setting in an unfamiliar neighborhood, and they have a reaction to that situation, which is actually normal given the circumstances. But at school or, again, in the foster home, we want to manage that reaction
Leslie,
in a way that we're all comfortable
with. And I was low. I'm sorry. It's 13%, depending on what state you're in. 13 to 52% of foster kids are medicated.
That's a lot. We need to take a quick break. Before we do, though, I just want to welcome on the line Lisa Bloom. She is, of course, a trial attorney. She was with me last week here in studio. She's with the Bloom Firm. She's the legal analyst for AVO, and she is a foster mom. Lisa, welcome back. You sound like you've got kind of a crazy connection there. I bet you're on the beach running or cycling or something like that.
Hi, Alan. Oh, no, I'm in my car. I was just cycling, so you must be,
I don't
know, SDSP or something. But yes, and I'm fascinated by the show today because I'm learning so much more about the foster care system. But I love being a foster mom, and I encourage everybody to try it out.
Okay, I know on your Twitter feed you've had a lot of discussions, and people have gone crazy. You've written, as a foster mom myself, this breaks my heart. There's always a reason why kids are moody or disruptive. You've said we need more loving adults to take in needy kids, not nonsense. I want to hear about that, and I want to hear what Leslie Haimov has to say about it, but we have to take a quick break. So we are going to talk to both Lisa and Leslie after the break. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Ladies and gentlemen,
hello. My name is.
Hey, this is Dr. Drew.
My name is.
And I'm Mike Cathew. And on the next Midday Live, we will take your calls and we'll catch up on the fight that continues between the GOP and Donald Trump. And Mike, guess what? A new problem with texting.
Oh, really?
Walking. You can be cited for texting while walking in the state of New Jersey. So says this new legislation.
Oh, gosh.
So you just avoid New Jersey, right?
Someone get on the phone with Bruce Springsteen. He's up in arms about this.
That and more on the next Midday Live with Dr. Drew and Mike Cathew on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
How you doing, caller?
Ugh, starving. I'm on a new diet. All I can see is food I can't have.
Have you considered AT&T?
For my diet?
Obviously. You can get unlimited talk, text, and data usage and your second month free when you make the switch to AT&T GoPhone. And your first 2 gigabytes are high speed.
Gigs you can bite?
No, but with no annual contract, you get a 4G LTE network that's worth feasting on.
Ooh. 4G LTE.
Plus, it's just $40 a month after a $5 auto refill discount.
It's a loaded buffet.
Yeah, and none of the calories.
Thanks for your help.
What are you eating?
Ooh, nothing.
AT&T, mobilizing your world. Get the second month free when you switch to AT&T GoPhone. In stores or at att.com/GoPhone.
Oh, I'm so full.
Have you been eating this whole time?
Limited time second month free offer requires a port-in and eligible service. Exclude AT&T and Cricket customers. GoPhone account must have SIM card and must be funded within first 26 days of activation to be eligible. Free month equals value of monthly plan purchased at activation. After first 2 gigabytes, data speeds reduced up to 128 kilobytes per second. First month, $45. $5 discount applied to monthly rate plan charge upon enrollment and auto refill. Additional charges and restrictions apply. See store for details.
Any person who makes or causes to be made any knowingly false or fraudulent material statement or material representation for the purposes of obtaining workers' compensation benefits is guilty of a felony.
Another day at work. The pain is getting worse, and I'm afraid to say anything because I need this job, and I don't want to get fired. If I wasn't the only one supporting the family, I'd quit.
Is this you? Are you suffering every day while your injuries get worse, and there seems to be nowhere to turn? Or do you have an injury that was brought on gradually by repetitive motion, and now you can't perform your job duties at all? For over 35 years, the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn has represented those who have sustained an injury on the job or have become disabled as a result of work. They're the experts in workers' compensation. You need an advocate. You need someone who cares about the injured worker. You need the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn to get you through the nightmare. Friends, if you're suffering with a cumulative work injury, the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn is in business to help you. Find out more. Call the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn, 855-4-RGW-LAW. That's 855-4-RGW-LAW. Or go to rgwlawfirm.com. First consultations are free.
You're listening to Gervie's Law, the intersection of law and life on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Yes, you are listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC. We are talking foster care today and all the issues. Learning a lot from Leslie Star Haimov. She is a certified child welfare law specialist and the executive director of the Children's Law Center. And on the line as well, we have Lisa Bloom, who is a civil rights attorney in Woodland Hills at the Bloom Firm. And she is a legal analyst for AVO. And, of course, she is a foster mom. Lisa, let's start off. Tell us your experiences with the foster care system here in California.
Well, my husband and I had a relationship with a boy because my husband was a big brother and in the Big Brothers program, and so he knew him, and he had been seeing him. And when the boy's mother got into some trouble, the boy was going to be placed in foster care. And that's when we decided that's not acceptable. We're going to be those foster parents. And so we took him in. And I had never been a foster parent before. I was surprised at how rigorous the process was, but I'm glad it is, because you do, you know, you should check people out if you're placing a child with them. So not only did we have to go get fingerprinted and interviewed, and they came to our home and they checked us out, and they, you know, they checked out every corner of our home. But yeah, they came back several times and, you know, to check us out. So, but we passed. And we had the kids for a number of about 6 months at that point when he was 12. His mother then recovered. He went back with her. And this year he's back with us as well. And I think he'll probably be with us until he's 18. So I, you know, sort of got into the sideways. We never really intended it, but it just sort of happened. But yeah. I love it. And, you know, we're thinking about taking in other foster kids. And mainly it's because my husband and I both came from, you know, abusive childhoods ourselves. And so we can really sympathize with kids, and we wish somebody would have reached out and helped us when we were kids. And I think a lot of adults have that experience. And it, frankly, it's very healing to be able to take a child in and help them and sort of break them out of a bad home life and really change the trajectory of their lives.
That's an incredible story and good for you. And I wish a lot of people would think that way. The question I have for you, Leslie, is Lisa's talking about having her son, the foster, I'm not, you know, will quote unquote, be given back to the parent. This is what we hear a lot about, how hard it is for these wonderful people like Lisa, who unfortunately, due to the system, may lose the foster child because they're reunited with a parent who may not be as fit or fit at all to serve as the parent. How do we deal with that situation?
And I want to start by also extending my thanks to Lisa and her husband and all of the other foster parents that have stepped up, because without you, we can't do our jobs at all. And, you know, reunification on its face may be confusing to folks, but it is the law. The law requires that we make our very best effort to return children to their family of origin if they can be returned safely. And that's the key, if they can be returned safely. Over 90% of the children who are reunified never come back into the child welfare system. 10 to 15%, depending on where we are in California and in the state, do unfortunately come back, as this young man did. But the majority of reunifications are successful, and it does put a huge strain and a huge burden on the foster parent, and it takes a special person to be able to honestly to put the child and their family of origin first. But research has shown that kids generally do better when they are with their family of origin, if they can be safely. So that is why the law continues to favor that as the first choice when it can be accomplished in a supportive way. Not to say that every child can be returned. They can't. And many, many are. In California, about a third of children return home to their family of origin, about a third are adopted, and about a third are with relatives.
Lisa, Carrie Kasem here, and Leslie, question for both of you. When you have a child, you've decided you want to foster them. I think the big brother and the, you know, big sisters is fantastic because you get to know the child. What if you are given a kid who maybe hurts your other children or is violent or there's something going on? What happens then? I mean, this is me speaking because I don't have kids, and this is something that I would love to do. I would love to take in a kid and help them. But what if you do get somebody that, or a kid that you just can't help?
Or can't handle.
Or can't handle, yeah.
Well, this is Leslie. So there is what's called a 7-day notice if it's sort of an emergency, which sounds terrible, and it is very traumatic for the child. But nobody's forced to keep a particular foster child indefinitely, and that's honestly one of the struggles, is at the same time that we have on one end of the spectrum foster parents who fall in love with the child and want to keep the child and raise him or her forever, we have others who either aren't able to for a good reason, as you just described, or who honestly will reject a child for reasons that have nothing to do with the child. And then that's, again, re-traumatizing the child.
Sure.
So we have to try to strike that balance.
And it, for kids that do have issues, and I'm just going to be talking for myself, because I, when I was a kid, I got, you know, or not a kid, I was an, I mean, yeah, I was still a kid, but not a little kid. I was told I had ADHD and ADD, and I was given all these, like, well, you have this, you may have this, and I was put on medication. And I know that it made me very sick. I hated it. I was pretty upset that I was old enough though to say, no, I'm not taking this anymore. And I didn't. And I figured out there, because it was my issue with food. I had food allergies and I was eating too much sugar, and sugar meaning like cereal, grains, pastas, along with my sugar. And my brain wasn't working because I didn't have enough vitamins, oils, and certain things that make it work. I now no longer have the ADD, ADHD, because it was food related. Is anybody helping these poor children who are probably drinking orange juice for breakfast, having a bowl of cereal, toast, and jam, which every single one of those foods I mentioned turn into sugar? You might as well eat a candy bar. So is anybody saying, hey, you know, ADD, ADHD, some of these mental illnesses are actually caused by food, so we can get these kids off of the drugs?
You're explaining my problems right now. Go ahead.
Okay. But seriously, I mean, it's like, because I was diagnosed, and it's BS.
All right, let's hear from first Leslie.
Sorry, it makes me upset because I, you know, because you can help with them.
We'll hear, going to hear from Leslie, but Lisa has to leave soon. But I do have an important question I want to ask her about one of her tweets
after Leslie answers this.
So I think, unfortunately, the vast majority of both foster parents and the doctors that are treating our kids are not paying attention to the things that you're talking about. In California, you know, that's a common understanding in terms of the impact of diet, but it's also sort of cutting edge. So it goes back to what I said earlier, that you need a parent who's willing to make all those changes, right? The 7-year-old's not going grocery shopping,
right,
and doesn't
right.
prepare the meal. So
yes.
I think there's a lot to be done in that regard. The one positive thing I can say is we do have a lot of legal process that's been instituted in the past couple of years with regard to the child being informed of the medication, having an opportunity to talk about side effects, and that they can, as you pointed out, refuse to take it, or through their lawyer have it reevaluated, or have the court change the order if the medicine's not working or is making the child feel worse.
Good.
Lisa, you tweeted at Lisa Bloom. It's at Lisa Bloom, LisaBloom, about the Utah judge said to order lesbian couple to give up foster child. Mm-hmm. It created quite a stir on your Twitter account. Tell us about that.
Yeah, well, I mean, how disgusting is it, first of all? There are so many kids that need a good home, either a foster home or need to be adopted. And when you have a loving couple, I don't care if they're a same-sex couple, opposite-sex couple, or if it's not even a couple, a single person, willing to take in a child and love the child and raise the child and is doing a good job, it's just appalling to me that the judge would take a child away. And that's what happened in that situation in Utah, that it's still happening in America, that children are being taken out of homes merely because it's a same-sex couple in that home. I mean, it just boggles my mind because, you know, I approach this from the other side. I wish I could take in all the foster children. I wish I could take thousands of them into my home and love them and raise them. And, you know, I want to encourage everybody out there to really think about it. I'm a person, I'm 54 years old. I have two grown children, biological children of my own. They're up and out. They live in another city. They're working. They're doing well. And, you know, I always kind of wanted to have more children, but I didn't. I only had two. And this has been so perfect for me because I feel like I already have all the parenting skills. Like, frankly, I feel confident as a parent. And, you know, I get to have more children this way. And you can take in a teenager. You don't have to take in somebody who's 3 years old, and frankly, it's a lot more work to take care of a 3-year-old than a teenager who can go to school by himself, come home by himself. You know, you tell him to brush his teeth and go to bed, he does it. It's a lot easier, in my opinion, to have a teenager.
But apparently,
those are the ones that are very hard to place.
Right.
Lisa,
right.
Apparently not everyone in this country agrees with you, because a couple of responses were, children do not need to be confused, please.
Ugh.
Oh, yeah, mommy, where is daddy? Really? So,
well, you know, people think, by the way, that all children are heterosexual. You know, 10% of those children are going to grow up to be gay, including my gay son, who I love and I'm very proud of, and who I exposed to a lot of gay people when they were growing up because that's my circle of friends. And, you know, so people need to, you know, get over their biases and their bigotry and focus on real problems, like children who need a home and who need to be loved. That's the real problem.
Leslie, can you respond to this issue about who is fit to be a foster parent?
I think Lisa did a great job. As she pointed out, children need to be loved, period, end of conversation, by a responsible and loving person or persons. And we, again, are fortunate in California that we long ago got past legal impediments to single parent fostering or single parent adoption or same sex couples. And we actually changed the law in California not long ago where there now can be more than two names on a child's birth certificate as well.
Hooray!
We have some great organizations if folks want to get assistance in becoming foster parents. If you just Google gay foster care, there are quite a few organizations that can help potential foster parents become foster parents.
And again, it's interesting because both sides of this debate will talk about the best interests of the child. What Lisa and Leslie are saying, they are considering the best interest, having a loving family, whatever that may be, having a loving person, whoever that may be. The other side of the coin, people are saying, well, you can't have that with same-sex marriage. You can't have that with a single parent. You know, there are a lot of people out there who are using the same bottom line interests of the child, but we just apparently can't agree on that. I know we have to let you go, Lisa, because it's 2:45, and you were gracious enough to give us this time and also wisdom about something that you have hold near and dear to your heart, foster parenting. So congratulations for that. Thanks for being with us again. We look forward to talking to you, Lisa, and we appreciate you taking your time today to talk about this subject.
Thank you, Alan. And I just want to say on the issue of same-sex parenting, it's really not a matter of opinion. It's a matter of the data, and the data is now overwhelming that children grow up just as healthy and happy and well-balanced in same-sex families as they do in opposite-sex families.
That's right. Whether there's a data or not, it is. That's what the data shows. Okay, that's just me playing a game with words.
That was good, Alan.
Thank you. All right, enjoy the rest of Leslie, ba-dum-bum. Thanks, Lisa. Leslie, can you stay with us for one more segment? We're going to take some calls. 800-222-5222, 800-222-5222. Please call us with any stories or questions or comments you have on foster care in California. You're listening to Gurry's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC. We will be right back.
Hey, L.A., wake up.
Wake up.
With Today in L.A., a simulcast of our news partner, NBC 4 News.
Weekday mornings at 4:30, right before McIntyre in the Morning with Doug McIntyre.
And Terry Ray Elmer on Talk Radio 790
KABC.
I'm Nick Soboleski, a SelectQuote agent with a true story that could save you hundreds of dollars a year. A woman named Linda just called. Her husband, Ray, has a $300,000 group life insurance policy, but is changing jobs and can't take it with him. Well, I impartially shopped the highly rated term life insurance companies we represent and found Ray, who is 41 and takes medication to control his cholesterol, a 10-year, $500,000 policy, for under $26 a month. That's almost twice the coverage for less than half of what he had paid. If SelectQuote hasn't shopped for your life insurance, you're probably paying too much.
For your free quote, call 1-800-471-9807. That's 1-800-471-9807. 1-800-471-9807. Or go to SelectQuote.com. We shop, you save. Get full details on the example policy at SelectQuote.com/commercials. Your price can vary depending on your health, issuing company, and other factors not available in all states.
Dustin Brown.
Scores from center ice! Dustin Brown!
Jonathan Quick.
Centers in front shot. Save is made by Quick.
Andre Kopitar.
The puck in front, Kopitar and on goal. Backhander, score!
And the rest of your Los Angeles Kings are out to reclaim their throne.
Royalty reigns again in the NHL!
Don't miss a second of the action as the Kings go for their third cup in 5 years. Kings, Bruins, tonight at 7 on your home for Kings Hockey.
790 KABC.
Home of the Kings, baby.
Need some legal, moral, or just common sense advice from a friend? Call Alan Gervey and Carrie Kasem now at 800-222-KABC. That's 800-222-5222.
Yes, we're back. I'm Alan Gervey. I'm here with Carrie Kasem. We are talking about foster care in California. We have with us on the line, Leslie Starr-Heimhoff, who's the executive director of the Children's Law Center. Quickly, Leslie, how do people get a hold of you or your organization, the Children's Law Center? Because for a lot of people, this is something new, and it's amazing that they have this opportunity to have an organization like yours to help out where there's a lot of people who need help.
Well, we are easy to find on the Internet. That's probably the easiest, at childrenslawcenterofcalifornia.org. And then all of our contact information, including phone number, is there.
I want to quickly ask, because we've got some calls we want to get to, but I want to quickly ask you, Leslie, what about lawsuits that take place either against the foster parent or... for instance, a child who may not be honest? You know, a lot of times the defense for the foster parent who is being sued is they're not being honest, we never abused the child. How do you deal with those situations?
So when the caregiver says that the allegation is false, that is brought to court and evaluated, again, through the typical court process, and the judge is the one who ultimately decides. And if necessary, they will take testimony from the caregivers, from the children, and from anyone else who may have information, as well as, of course, including any medical evidence regarding injuries and the like. And it's pretty uncommon that there's any significant action unless the injury is very, very serious. So, for example, if a child's in a foster home and they say, my foster parents spanked me, or they even, you know, they yelled at me, they pushed me, they did this or that, that's a placement that typically is not working out. So the child may be moved, but there might not be any action taken against the foster parent. If it's more serious and there's actually a visible injury, that's when you get to the point of the type of litigation that folks would think of in terms of lawsuits,
right,
and whatnot.
That makes sense. Lauren, you're in Los Angeles. Welcome to Gervie's Law.
Thank you.
So what's going on, Lauren?
Well, I am a foster adopt parent. And I just want to preface this by saying that I believe her name is Lisa, who had two children, and she's excited to have a third one.
Right.
I didn't need a fifth child. I have four children of my own. The way I came to know my new son is I'm a workers' comp doctor, and he was one of many foster children that have been brought to my clinic over the last 18 years. And, you know, I got to say, like, no child, and I'm sure we all agree on this, no child deserves to be in a foster care system. My son was like Einstein in the foster care system. So when I started thinking about adoption, I'm sitting here telling myself, oh, I'm crazy. Because my children are adults. Most of my children are adults. I'm 50 years old. I have a son who's graduating law school. I have a daughter who's getting a master's in education. I got another one who's, pre-med, and I got a special needs daughter who's 18. So, you know, to have another child. And then I started talking to friends about it. Everybody told me I was crazy. And I finally sat down with my four older children, and I said, you know, this is not like when you were little and I kept having babies and didn't ask you. This is a family decision. We decided to go through it, and I adopted as a single parent.
So how did you do with the experience of this process? Because,
well, first of all,
I know it's not simple.
This is ridiculous. My son was, by the time he was 4 years old, he was in six different foster homes.
Aww.
His hands were burned in one of the foster homes, both of them, to the point where he had to have emergency grafting surgery. So, you know, I just want to say this. When I did go through you have to take 21 hours of classes so that you can be, you know, and then they inspect your home and they do all kinds of, you know, interviews before you're certified by Department of Children and Family Services. And I noticed that in my class, I think maybe I was the only parent actually who was in the class, and most of the couples were same-sex couples or even, even people who are adopting as single parents. That said, what I've noticed the big issue is reunification, because I've had friends say to me, oh, how did you adopt this kid so easily? Well, you know, and they say, I know people have been on private adoption lists for years. And part of the issue is reunification. And I don't agree, because over the last 18 years of seeing children come in and out of my clinic with their foster parents who are my patients, I don't think that it's so easy. I don't, you know, and I think that reunification is a nice thing when you have a very, very young mother with no family help, and maybe the baby's father isn't around or available. and she just needs a minute to learn how to be a parent. Or reunification is nice when, you know, somebody becomes addicted either to prescription medication or other drugs, and they just, you know, need to get sober.
Lauren, just a second. I just want to ask Leslie, because this is an important issue, the reunification. Is there a movement? Apparently people like Lauren are not thrilled with the concept. You've explained it on the show already. But is there a movement to get around this reunification to encourage more foster parents to stick with the program rather than to have that fear of the reunification?
Well, I'm not sure if there's a movement, but there are, I want to say, 16 different reasons that are in the law, in the Welfare and Institutions Code, situations where there won't be reunification ordered. So the legislature and the law has taken into account that not every child can be reunified. But overall, it is still the best thinking that when we can, as I said before, fairly quickly, there's an 18-month limit is what it's supposed to be, and safely return children home, that is the first choice of the law.
And, Lauren, you would disagree with that?
I would completely disagree. How does a 4-year-old wind up in 6 different homes? And, by the way, you know, for anybody who's considering to foster, adopt, and it is one of the greatest experiences of my life. You're going to get a kid. When you have a kid that's been taken out of their birth family or away from their birth family, you're going to have a kid with issues. But I would also like to reiterate, when you have them, you don't know what you're going to get.
That's right. Good point.
I was 32 years old when I had my youngest daughter. I was healthy. It was a healthy pregnancy. It was a good delivery. And she's always going to be like a 3-year-old. You don't know what you're going to have.
Lauren, unfortunately, this is only an hour show, so we have to cut it there. There's a lot to say on it. We have Dennis on the line. Dennis, you're in Sherman Oaks. Dennis is gone. Hello?
Yeah,
is he there? Hi,
yes.
Dennis, what's up?
Yeah, I'm
just a minute.
Curious. Would either one of you be willing to concede that not the only way, but the ideal way, to raise a child is a functional, loving man and woman?
No, you know, and I'll tell you this. You know, let me just say why I'm not going to say that that's right, because I know two kids. One man named Daniel had two dads, and another woman that I know, Cindy, had two moms. And I'll tell you something. They stayed together. One of them died. The one who had two moms. One mom died, but they were together longer than most of my parents. And these two kids are fantastic, and they
Carrie,
work hard.
You always bring up just an isolated example. I want to know the statistics, because I don't doubt that
what I'm saying is true. No, I'm just saying I've witnessed.
What position do you have that would suggest that a loving man and woman is the best way to raise a child?
I just think it is healthier for a child to be exposed from the beginning to a man and what makes up a man, so he gets a judgment call, or I can't quite put it into words.
Would you be against?
You just want to see the way society is composed, and it starts in the home.
Well, we're not sure the way society is composed anymore. It's composed in a lot of different ways. Just quickly, because we have to run, would you be against foster parents being a man and a man, or a woman and a woman?
If I had a choice between the two, I would go with the women. Yes, without hesitation.
Okay. Thanks for the call, Dennis. We need to wrap up. Leslie, thank you so much for being on the show. It's really important. Just the closing message, because we have to cut out now. What can we do to make this experience more positive? What can we do for the children of California who are in the foster care system to improve on their the opportunities for them to live a happy and healthy life?
I think the one single thing that we need is more people like Lisa and her husband who will step up and provide either temporary or permanent homes for children whose families are in distress.
That makes a lot of sense, and I think that is something that we can all identify with, and we take off our hats to people who have made sacrifices for children, for the love of their kids, and for foster kids. Leslie Starheimov, thank you so much for being on Gervie's Law. She's the Executive Director of Children's Law Center. Thanks.
Thank you, Leslie.
Have a good day. We have to cut out. We're getting to the end of the show. We never leave enough time at the end of the show, Carrie, that we can just chat.
No. We need 2 hours, Alan. We need 2 hours. Debbie?
KBC. There. Debbie's putting her thumbs up.
Maybe
5 days a week. Who knows? I want to thank everyone who was on the show today. A fascinating topic. Hopefully, we've done some good today. Gervie's Law will be with you again next week, Saturday at 2 o'clock. Enjoy your week and hang in there. We are doing everything we can to make things better in life.
This show furnished by Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn.